we are living in a world of stress and go, go, go. And often when we live in that, unfortunately, that comes with a dose of cortisol that, you know, and other stress hormones that mean your heart rate tends to be quite high, and you haven't quite developed that aerobic efficiency, or you've lost it along the way. But it's the good news is it can totally be retrained and retuned.
Welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Each week, renowned sports scientist and founder of Athletica AI, Dr. Paul Larson, athlete, coach, and sports scientist Mariana Rakai, and coach and cyclist Paul Warlowski discuss training, racing, and improving your health and fitness. Get ready for your journey to peak performance.
Hello and welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast, where we navigate training, fitness, and health for everyday athletes. Are you leaving speed on the table? Most endurance athletes focus on building their aerobic capacity, their VO2 max, but there's another physiological lever that might be even more important for long-term performance: aerobic efficiency. Today, we're breaking down the research and the science on how efficiently your body uses oxygen, why it matters more than you think, and what the science says about training it. So let's get right into it. Paul, what is aerobic efficiency and how does it affect our endurance performance?
Ultimately, looking at how much speed or power that you're getting per unit of oxygen, right? So how efficient can you be with processing that on that oxygen from chemical energy into mechanical energy? That's what really what we care about, performance at the end of the day. And this is one way we can kind of look to, optimizing that. So you don't want to be inefficient at, you know, processing oxygen and then, you know, not necessarily moving that oxygen into mechanical energy. So this is a bit of a marker on how efficient that process is.
Okay. So let's take a step back and kind of get into the science of it a little bit, and give us the 101 version of what happens in the muscle cells when someone improves their aerobic efficiency. What changes? Mitochondria, capillaries, fiber types, all of the above.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, all of those things. So when you train, and we've done lots of podcasts on training, and there's a signal that goes to the muscle, and that signal, you know, if we geek out, it's actually has a chemical name called PGC1 alpha, and it signals for more mitochondria. You know, we often talk about mitochondria. Those are the organelles, the powerhouses in any cell, and it signals to make more of those. So you get more mitochondria, and those are the guys that are basically processing that oxygen. They're converting the chemical energy from the food that you eat, carbs, fats, protein, into the energy molecule ATP, the chemical energy, and then that converts to movement in the muscle, and that's the transfer into the mechanical energy. So the more of those powerhouses that you have, the more mitochondria that you have, or even the better those mitochondria are formed, the greater improvement you can get in that aerobic efficiency and in that whole process of turning chemical energy into mechanical energy. So, and that, like you said, Paul, that comes with greater capillary density. That comes with this fiber type shift from type 2As to type 1 fibers, or type 2X to type 2As. And yeah, and more oxidative enzymes at the same time. So all these things are happening in synchrony. We're not actually able to quantify these. The laboratory studies tell us that that's all the things that happen. What we see is we're looking at our dashboard, and we are looking at how a couple of markers in Athletica might be changing. And one of those are your efficiency factor. And that's really looking at ratios of heart rate to power in the cycling or rowing context, and the ratio of heart rate to pace in the running context or swimming context. And we're going to see changes in that ratio. You want to have faster speeds or higher powers for the same heart rate, say the same submaximal heart rate. And then if we look at a session, we break up a session into, we can split it in half, and we look at the efficiency factor in the beginning half, and we look at the efficiency factor in the latter half, and we compare those two, then we now have our aerobic decoupling number. And you also see this on your dashboard. So you look at any session and you've measured heart rate and power or heart rate and pace in it, you can scroll down, click on it, and see what your aerobic decoupling number is. And typically when we're not too trained, that aerobic decoupling number is a little bit high. We might see it like, you know, 9 or 10, and for a submaximal zone 1, zone 2 type of effort. And then as we develop our fitness and we look at that same session repeated over, you know, a month or two later, you might see that number going from, say, 9, 10 down to 4, 5. And then when we look to our elite athletes, we actually see the number going negative, amazingly enough. So if you have like a negative aerobic decoupling number, that means that you're basically becoming more aerobically fit and efficient the longer the session goes on, which is crazy, right? So you're seeing less, like you're actually, the heat of your muscles, et cetera, they actually start being even more efficient the longer you go, the more fat that you burn. And this is like the super elite athletes, right? We look at like a Christian Blumenfeld and whatnot, they would, I guarantee you, they would all have negative aerobic decoupling numbers. So yeah, long-winded answer there, but you know, we've got this across all the physiology and even right to your dashboard in Athletica.
So I would add that the efficiency factor EF, when somebody starts to train, especially running, their number might be 0.5 or 0.7, something like that. And then as they get fitter and fitter, that number starts to increase towards 1. And I bet super fits have a lot higher efficiency factor. So those kind of are like, I don't know if they're correlated, but the more efficient you can be, the lower the aerobic decoupling, I guess, because you're just so efficient.
That's right. Yeah, you got it. No, that was a perfect example, NJ.
So does it matter? How do I ask this question? I mean, you talked about a 9 or 10 for submaximal, for 1 or 2 for aerobic efficiency, for decoupling rather. Should it be just the slow rides, the zone 1, zone 2? Can we do that also with threshold or VO2 max intervals?
Yeah, so what happens? So the answer is no, it should only be zone 2 rides and below, where we can accurately get this number. Maybe zone 3 as well. Like we might be able to look at some how that number looks on zone 3. But the problem when we start to look at zone 4, zone 5, so threshold and above efforts, you develop what's called this VO2 slow component, and there's this increased cascade of lactate use, and heart rate kind of has to go skyward just to meet up with the demand. So it kind of violates the validity of anything assessed above that marker. So we tend to look at this at zone 1, zone 2, maybe zone 3 for threshold, for tempo kind of efforts. But that's really where, that's the only valid place where you can kind of accurately detect these ones. In the super elite, that might be an exception. So if we've got a super elite, maybe we might even look at these in zone 4. Like they might even be kind of on a zone 4 threshold. If they're the super elite, they might also still, you might still be able to look at this marker, and that would be, you know, wow, this person's even got aerobic efficiency at that zone 4 kind of threshold efforts.
So the research suggests, and I say suggest because there's conflicting research, that polarized training works best to improve aerobic efficiency. Time-crunched athletes tend to use tempo and threshold workouts to make up some of that time. Does that affect aerobic efficiency? I mean, let's maybe take a step back and talk about what is the best way to train aerobic efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Well, so for me, I think it's probably a polarized or a pyramidal approach, but you know, classic Norwegian method. But the key factor you've got to have in there, in my opinion, is the so-called adaptation energy, the development of your aerobic base, or you know, your zone 1, zone 2 work. You really have to have that going. because a lot of that, you know, is fundamental to creating all the adaptations that we spoke about, from the increasing the capillarization, capillary density, mitochondrial development, fat burning. All these sorts of things are, they're affected by all the training, the whole entire polarized approach. But the bigger hammer to create that movement and that change is probably your zone one, zone two work and having ample amounts of it.
I'm going to throw in strength training to increase output.
Yeah. Like, I'm so glad you did.
So if you're somebody who hasn't done any strength training, just doing a lot of, you know, base training, zone one, zone two, maybe some VO2 max, like a polarized training method. If you add in the strength component and you can actually push more power, that will affect your efficiency factor.
Yes, absolutely. So, and that comes down to ultimately raising the ceiling of your strength, right? And that's, you know, you're able to ultimately make ground contact and more efficiently create force against the ground. And you do that more efficiently, and it's less of your, you know, total capacity to lift yourself back up and, you know, ultimately create, say, a shorter contact time with the ground. And therefore a greater flight time. And so you're, again, more efficient. You're not necessarily, there's not necessarily anything happening from the aerobic efficiency standpoint at the mitochondrial level, but absolutely, MJ, to your point, this is going to be reflected in those markers in Athletica. So we don't really care where it comes from. We just want to move faster, right? We care about performance. But you're absolutely right, and you're going to see changes in efficiency factor and aerobic decoupling in the positive direction.
And now let's take the aging into the picture. So what happens as we age? If we don't do strength training, our strength goes down, our output goes down, and that then decreases our efficiency, right? Or if you're thinking about stress, our heart rate, or any kind of stress, like heat stress, altitude stress, psychological stress, our heart rate is very easily triggered to be higher. So maybe you're going through something and at any given normal aerobic session, your heart rate is higher, then that will affect your efficiency factor negatively, right?
Yes, absolutely. For sure. Because you've just changed the heart rate. You change the denominator on the variable, right? So yeah.
Absolutely. Does it matter what kind of strength work we have?
It does, Paul. So I mean, if you're just doing push-ups and sit-ups, you're probably not going to see anything here. Like, we're talking specifically, you know, squats and lunges and you know, compound movements ultimately that are going to be similar to the vertical force kinetics that you're experiencing for running. So we're specifically talking about running. You are going to, you know, also get benefits in, you know, cycling and rowing, because those are the primary movements in those ones as well too. But we really see this one a big, you know, really improve in the running more than anything, I think. Because, you know, that's what you actually have to do, right? Like, you have to exert a force on the ground, and you have to do it in a short time. Like, you want to have a reduced contact time with the ground when you have that, like a quick snap. You know, good runners and coaches call this the pop factor. When you have good pop off the ground, you have this short contact time, and then you increase your flight time in the air, because running is a series of jumps at the end of the day. That's all it is. And that's really what strength training does for this metric. And that's why you see it in your Athletica plans. And that's why we should do strength training if we care about our endurance performance.
Let's talk about the aerobic decoupling for a second and the heart rate. Like, so I used to live in Dubai, riding my bike there, and we left like 5 a.m. when it was a little bit cooler. But eventually, when you're doing 6 hours, you're going to hit that heat at some point. So aerobic decoupling would be definitely affected by the heat at the end, plus, you know, the fatigue and all that. But definitely heat was pushing the heart rate. up.
Absolutely. So for an acute session like that, you've got to expect a poor aerobic decoupling session, or like acutely. If you are just looking at that one session and you've just arrived in Dubai and you go out there for your training session, you're going to have a really bad number. You should expect that. But what of course is going to happen is you do that session, that same session next week, you've adapted, you have an increased plasma volume expansion. You know, all of a sudden now you've got more water component in your cardiovascular system. Heart rate goes down for a given power output or pace. And now the aerobic decoupling number is improved. It goes a little bit less. And then, and again, we continue to repeat that stimulus. And that's the training effect on specifically the heat adaptation component of that training adaptation. So this is also where we sort of, we see that improved number as well. So yeah, really, really good point and something to be aware. Altitude's the same, no different there with altitude. So less oxygen available. We're also going to see a higher heart rate because heart rate has to beat harder to accommodate for the reduced oxygen availability. So it's got to beat faster to meet the aerobic demand. But again, this is why we go to altitude sometimes on training camps to get that benefit. Yeah, important. As we always say, like context is so important. So all of these contextual considerations must be considered when you're reflecting on that marker.
Mariana brought up age and older athletes. Is a 50-year-old cyclist able to actually improve their aerobic efficiency, or are they just hanging on to what they have?
Yeah, nice one.
Asking well, for a friend.
So interesting, so timely that you asked this question. So I literally got off my last call with Dr. Andrea Zagnoli, who he's been on the podcast multiple times. Many will know him. He's our back-end developer. And he is currently, I'll release this to our listeners. He's currently, this might not be out if you just check this and you just come grab this podcast and you go on. But this is, I'll tell you what's being developed, because he just used me as a you know, an alpha tester for this whole innovation. And ultimately, so, and I am 55, so yes, this does happen. The AI coach is actually able now in future versions of Athletica to look at historic levels of aerobic decoupling and detect similar sessions, and then look at the aerobic decoupling progression. And in my example, again, remember in the context, I'm coming out of the winter in Revelstoke, British Columbia, lots of snow. I'm only now just starting to improve, like increase the number of sessions out on the road as the snow melts away. And I'm starting to get more data. And the AI coach was able to notice and reflect and say, Paul, or like Andrea asked on my behalf, is Paul improving in his aerobic efficiency? And sure enough, it was picking out the aerobic decoupling numbers over the last couple months. And I'm making these small, subtle changes. And the AI coach even said, well, Paul, these changes are modest, but significant, and continue to get out there and make your progress. So yes, Paul, you can still, at any age, you can continue to make gains. I think it's cyclical though, right? Like, you know,
sure.
We are going to have to look at, you know, what was last year or the year before, but certainly within the cyclical nature of a northern hemisphere person living in a snow filled environment where I'm not training, I'm doing a lot more outdoor downhill skiing compared to cycling. We can definitely see changes on a weekly basis, and those are now detectable by the Athletica AI coach.
There's hope.
There's hope for all of us. For all of us. Just keep going, team. We got this.
So back to strength training for a moment. There was some research, and we'll include that in the show notes, from Mathy, suggesting that women gain more aerobic efficiency from resistance training than men. What's going on there? Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't really, but I mean, kind of comes back to the conversation we were having with MJ, where she was emphasizing the importance of that resistance training. We were talking about how that improves the, you know, the impulse factor that you can make onto the ground or onto the pedal stroke if we're a cyclist. But then I also reflect, you know, we had you know, Dr. Rebecca Robinson on the podcast last. And, you know, she was talking about the importance of estrogen as a hormone in women that is very supportive for health and, of course, also aerobic efficiency. We know from much of the research in the sports sciences that women tend to be better fat burners than men if we're looking on average. And that's probably an estrogen, you know, influenced variable as well. So yeah, if a woman starts training and she's probably within the before perimenopause, then with ample levels of estrogen, she's probably possibly advantaged. But I'm hypothesizing here as we go. I'm speaking on the fly. This is kind of what I'm thinking. Maybe MJ knows.
I wonder if I have not read this research study, by the way, so I don't know how the study was done, but I wonder if it's the fact that women tend to strength train less than men, so we have more to gain when we first start to strength train. So it could be that.
That's a good mm-hmm. guess. As always, we often say context first, right? So, yep, have to look at the context of the study.
So what's the timeline here for us? If someone starts a polarized program, when, with lots of zone one, zone two kind of work, when can they expect to see some reasonable, measurable improvements in efficiency?
Yeah, so that's a super question. It kind of goes back to the conversation I was having with Andrea. And, you know, the AI coach was able to detect changes in me, in aerobic efficiency, in a single month. So I'm back training after a month and doing, you know, repeated sessions. So, and more on the road. And there are these modest, to quote the AI coach, modest improvements in aerobic efficiency being changed. And that's, we talk about this so often. Luke Evans was a great podcast who really said this, you know, where Luke Evans was really basically coming off the coach as a hockey player, but then he wanted to sort of do this whole Ironman journey. And again, for the listener who doesn't know Luke Evans, he's the guy and the poster boy is on the Athletica front page who won Ironman Canada unbeknownst to us. You know, Luke said that just the changes are just so subtle, but there, as long as you're training consistently, you continue to signal and make those subtle changes, and they build one after the next. So as long as I keep going out there, Paul, and keep up my consistency and stay on the plan, I'm pretty confident I'm going to continue to build those changes out. And again, you know, I'll be same goal as last year, is really just to kind of, you know, keep the VO2 close to the age. That's the goal.
The perennial goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say, like, if you're trying to improve your efficiency factor and focusing on strength training, allow yourself plenty of time. Like I would say 3 months before you will start seeing a meaningful effect.
Yeah, possibly relates to, like, training is in my blood and I've done it before, right? So there's also the whole concept of plasticity of response. So I'm, you know, I have a really strong, you know, my muscle memory, and the changes that I make when I go back to return to certain training, the changes in me, due to my history, are very quick. So I think they are very individual. So to MJ's point, you're absolutely right. Be patient, because yes, it might not be quick for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we've got efficiency factor and aerobic decoupling in Athletica. Other platforms have the same. Are there other metrics we should be looking at or can look at in order to help us gauge whether we're making progress?
Well, just acutely, I mean, even if we kind of take a step back, if you know you've got a standard session, any standard session could be high intensity or low intensity, but look at the heart rate response relative to the power or the pace, you know, or the hill repetition distance, whatever it might be. And you should be able to see, you know, change. If you're seeing changes, if you're seeing improvements, or if you're seeing a lower heart rate relative to the same thing at power or pace, That's has to be aerobic efficiency that's improving. You have to be, the whole oxygen aerobic cascade has improved from when it was before. Yeah, those are the big ones to kind of to keep an eye out. Threshold changes as well, right? Again, back to Athletica. If you're getting, you know, the AI coach is hammering you for noticing these changes, these positive changes in threshold, it's probably mostly aerobic efficiency that's responsible for those changes.
All right, so we've got aerobic efficiency, meaning how much speed or power per unit of oxygen. What else, how can we wrap this up in terms of what we can offer our listeners in terms of practical advice and how to improve it and how to notice it?
I think, speaking from my own experience, I was chasing, like, I had this same loop that I would cycle in Dubai, and I would always try to be a little bit faster, a little bit faster, a little bit faster, which meant that I was always going towards zone three and not staying in the lower intensities. So I would encourage, if you feel like you might be chasing the always a little bit faster route, to turn off your music, turn off your podcast, don't listen to anything, just be in the moment and just try to, like, learn how your body is working at those low intensities and, like, forget about the time. Maybe even turn off all the data.
I'd say, yeah, spot on. But the big rock for me in this, and I'm not sure if we've really addressed it adequately, but it's almost like the one way you can really blunt your development of aerobic efficiency might be too much high intensity training, right? And that's the biggest mistake that most endurance athletes make, right? Is they think that more is better, harder is better, no pain, no gain, all that kind of, you know, old school philosophy now, I really feel. But that's the biggest change that you can make that's going to have a big impact. That's why the heart rate variability guided training works, because if you have that really solid aerobic base, a stable heart rate variability, then it shows that your body is ready to accept that, accept and adapt to that high intensity stimulus. So if you're not ready for that, and if you don't have that solid base there, and every session is always hard, you've got to slow down first. So you got to go easy first and make sure that you've got a really, really good solid aerobic base that's beneath you before doing the hard stuff. So that's probably number one thing you should check in your overall training strategy going forward.
That is so true, because often you see, like, people who are new to running, they post their Garmin data on Facebook groups or whatever and say, hey, my heart rate is always 175. What's wrong? I'm never getting, you know, better. And that exactly, that they are focusing on the wrong data. Like, they're focusing on trying to get their heart rate as high as possible instead of, like, just walk run. Guys, you know what? I'm back at running, but I'm walk running. So I'm like doing 2 minutes walk and 3 minute run, but at least I'm running.
Good job, MJ. Yeah, it's the biggest one. And it's the biggest complaint or customer service message that we often receive. People can't understand why their zone two heart rate is just so high. Now, there's a reason behind that. Often we are living in a world of stress and go, go, go. And often when we live in that, unfortunately, it comes with a dose of cortisol that, you know, and other stress hormones that mean your heart rate tends to be quite high, and you haven't quite developed that aerobic efficiency, or you've lost it along the way. But it's the good news is it can totally be retrained and retuned. And we see this time and time again in, you know, just look at the Athletica forum stories of people doing this, where they slow down first to go faster. Classic Phil Maftone's been on the podcast multiple times, start going easy first to go fast later. And it's hard. It takes patience. It doesn't necessarily feel good. You feel like you're wasting your time. But, and, you know, we sound like a broken record, but this is what we do to make people healthy and fit. You got to do that first and then develop that aerobic efficiency, develop your maximal aerobic function, and boom, it's like performance, man.
I'm working with a woman right now who we just started working together, and that's been our biggest challenge, is getting her to run slowly. And because it feels slow, and it's like, I know, but it just takes time. And all of a sudden the one day you're going to see your efficiency factor improve and you're going to be flying. And it's, you know.
Yeah. Well, we had one of our ambassadors, you guys were on the call, I think, Frank, gosh, yeah, he's great. Right. So he comes sort of from I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying, but he comes from the hockey background, and he was really questioning, you know, politely questioning this philosophy, right? Because he wasn't sort of seeing, but then he was hearing enough stories. You know, Luke Evans, I think, might have been on the call and convinced him. And then he did it for the next month. He came back and he's like, oh yeah, no, I'm seeing the changes now, and this is really nice. So, you know, it's we see it, we hear it all, you know, time and time again. We love it when we hear it. And it's, we very rarely don't, right? So it's changeable in all of us, and it's so exciting and fun when you do.
Yeah. You know, like I'm living it. I'm living that. Like I had to take a long break where I was just like walking, and now I'm just trying, I miss running. So I'm trying to get back to running, and I'm starting with 2 minutes walk and then 3 minutes run. And I'm running so slow. I'm running 7 minutes per K, which is like 2 minutes, almost 2 minutes slower than what I used to run just 2 years ago. So it is frustrating, and I feel like a turtle, but at least I'm running, right? 3 minutes at a time. So I'll keep you guys posted how it goes. Hopefully in a couple of months I'll be fully running on and a little bit faster.
Yeah. I mean, this is really, you know, we're talking about the ability to adapt to your training, right? So the last Training Science podcast, I just had Dr. Lawrence Van Lingen on, who's he's coached movement with Andy Buscher. That's really how I knew him. He's the one of the athletic ambassadors, but also, you know, Taylor Nibb.
Rini?
What's that?
Miranda Carfrey.
Right, Rini. Right. Yeah. And many others, right? So it's he's an absolute legend there. But the key thing that he teaches, and he says, and this said this in the podcast, is you need to work towards inducing vagal tone. So we're talking here about the vagus nerve. We're talking about the parasympathetic nervous system. Rest and digest, not fight or flight. Like you got to induce calm, and those are really all the things that he kind of teaches. It's the you know, it's the old adage. It's like not just all about the training. You've got to accept and absorb properly the training that you did. So really, he's just focusing on the other side of the equation, but no one else really does. And that's kind of what is all of his methods are there to help induce that vagal tone. And it makes all the difference, right? Because we're really, if you're just focusing on the training, you're just getting that training set and not focusing on the recovery, then you don't absorb the things that you do. And all the HRV guided training studies support that. You just don't adapt if you can't accept the training. So yeah, it's a cool one.
It's a cool one, but nobody quite understands, or it's a little bit like vague because you can't measure it. We all love data. We want to measure it. Like how do we measure what we can absorb, right? Like it's, so,
but I think we can. I think we're getting better. I think the HRV guided kind of metrics, you know, that you get with Whoop or Aura or Garmin systems that measure that overnight, do a not bad job of getting at least insight into that. You could couple those with the comments, the, you know, RPE and feel. I think maybe we're not there yet, and it's not mainstream. I completely agree with you, MJ, but we're starting to make inroads into that. Vagal tone is HRV, right? Like that's what RMSSD is trying to get an insight into. I know it's not perfect. I know all the limitations, but at least it's a start. Is everyone doing that? No, definitely not. There's a lot of room for us all to grow in that space, but we're starting to get there. We're starting to starting to have an impact.
And it's great. But when we are busy professionals, we have families, we have dogs to walk, we have busy schedules, and then we throw in training plan there. When we are stressed out and we have that race, or we have those goals that we want to get fitter, that element of letting our bodies absorb and taking a break and resting. And, you know, sometimes it takes a long time. For me, it has like this, the whole heart issue has taken so long, and I'm by nature very impatient. I want things to happen. It is so hard to believe in this whole vagal tone, and like you just need to let your body heal, and you know what I mean, like it's so hard to put those little pieces in your busy schedule, and then we listen to these, you know, go hard and you gotta get this done, and you know, the messaging that we get from society, it's really hard as a age group athlete.
If we're not doing this, you're not going to adapt. You're not going to tell those mitochondria to be better and make more of them. You might give the acute signal, but if you don't also allow for the autonomic balance to occur, I mean, this is classic. This is like a Seeler and Kurjan 2004. They put this out there when, you know, Steven Seeler was on the podcast. He basically came up or invented the polarization theory. He said, really, I know why he's American Texan going over to Norway. And he says, I think I've figured it out why they're going so well here. That somehow the Norwegians are finding a way to optimize molecular signaling with autonomic balance. So we've been talking about the molecular signaling to make those mitochondria. But in the second half of the podcast, where we got a little bit woo-woo, we're talking about the autonomic balance. You've got to have the autonomic nervous system, your central nervous system, the parasympathetic side of it, the vagal tone, to be able to build it up and create those adaptations. So even though we were going woo-woo, we're still talking about aerobic efficiency.
I feel like that there needs to be a sequel to this whole Norwegian autonomic nervous system stimulation. I have some ideas.
Spin off at Paul. Paul's always the one that is creating the topic for us, and he does an amazing job.
But yeah. It's written down. That's the big exclamation mark. So we got it going.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening today to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Take a moment now, subscribe, share, and let's keep navigating this endurance adventure together. Improve your training with the science-based training platform Athletica and join the conversation at the Athletica Forum. For Mariana Rakai and Dr. Paul Larson, I'm Paul Warlowski, and this has been the Athlete's Compass podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed another episode of the Athlete's Compass podcast, your North Star through the sometimes complicated world of training for your endurance sport. We appreciate your comments and training questions and your 5-star reviews. For a deeper dive into the science of endurance sports, listen to the Training Science Podcast and check out the adaptive AI training platform athletica.ai. Thanks for listening.